Mike Wilner, of course, the host of Blue Jays Baseball. He will be on the air at 1:30 this afternoon for the pregame show. But before that, we've got him right now for a little recap of the first two games of the series, maybe a look ahead to game three tonight as well, or this afternoon. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Benefin.
Hey, what do you think of the Bautista leading off thing?
Fine by me.
Yeah.
I have always been a proponent of have your best hitters at the top of the lineup. In a perfect world, it's not Jose Bautista. It's someone with a little less power because you don't want to guarantee that one at bat per game where he's coming up with nobody on for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine. I mean, look at how it played out both games against Minnesota, right? And on Thursday night in the 10th inning, Bautista was the one who came up with a runner at third and two out. He didn't get the run in, but only because of spectacular play by Eduardo Nunez at short. And then yesterday when it's 4-1 and they're on the verge of blowing the game open, it's Bautista who comes up with two on and two out after the Paredes single. So, I mean, the whole point of doing this is not about the first inning. It's about later in the game and getting those big bats up sooner, and it worked perfectly.
I love it, honestly, because I think we've had this conversation. We were talking about who leads off and Troy Tulowitzki, and people saying, oh, well, Troy Tulowitzki should do it because he takes walks. And I said, well, okay, if you're just going to go down that path, which I don't necessarily disagree with, how about the guy with the best on base percentage on this team, which is Jose Bautista?
That's the thing. But like I said off the top,
I know.
And the reason I wanted Tulowitzki there is because Tulowitzki's like a 30 home run guy and Bautista's a 40 home run guy.
Right.
So, you know, that's nitpicking at this point in time.
Right.
And you don't want Tulowitzki leading off right now the way he's going, even though he seems to be coming out of it. He's hitting 300 over his last 40 at bats.
Mm-hmm.
Bautista's as long as he's willing to do it, and clearly he is, and that, for me, that was always going to be the stumbling block. It's a great idea.
Yeah, and apparently this was proposed by the players, which kind of caught me off guard.
Me too.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I was very much in the camp that believed that he didn't want to do it, like you just said. He apparently was part of the group that came up with this plan, which is, like, good, I think, in one respect, but also, I don't know if concerning is the right word, but kind of like, I don't know, John Gibbons, there's been a couple of things that I've had qualms with the manager this season. One is that he's just a little too slow in my eyes to react or to be proactive instead of reactive, that there's moves to be made, whether it was removing Drew Storen from the eighth inning that could have been made a couple of appearances before they did and maybe prevented a loss or two. The lineup has been garbage through a month and a half, and here we are late May, and it's finally seeing its first major shift as far as the lineup. And I know he's changed leadoff man earlier in the season, but something about that, I know it's good that Jose Bautista is, I guess, putting the team ahead of himself, but it's also kind of interesting that it's not the manager's decision. Well, I mean, he has the ultimate decision, but it wasn't his idea, maybe?
Well, here's the thing. For me, I don't see John Gibbons as being slow to react. I mean, he committed to Kevin Pillar as the leadoff man going into the season, and 12 games in, he made a change. That's a really quick reaction.
No, that one, that bucks the trend of what I'm talking about. That's not a
Bruce
prime
Storen,
example.
You mentioned he gave him a month as the setup man. That's it. He gave him a month. This guy has been an elite-level relief pitcher in the major leagues for 5 years.
Right.
He gave him a month.
Yeah,
and a month was like
one-sixth of the season,
two-thirds innings or something.
Sure, but there was process and results. The process was bad, Mike.
The process was good.
Not for Drew Storen. No, for Drew Storen, the process was horrible. He was throwing 91 and getting even his outs were loud. No, the process was horrible for Drew Storen.
I'm talking about the process of giving Drew Storen the opportunity
that's
to work
fine.
His way out of it.
But,
no, these are human beings, and that's the thing that we often forget. You don't just pull the rug out from under veterans, proven veterans, you know, Kevin Pillar had never been a leadoff man before. Fine. He was a 278 hitter with like a 303 on base last year. Mm-hmm. So he gets the job. He has a great spring. 12 awful games as a leadoff man, he's out. Mm-hmm. Drew Storen didn't even get 12 games, and he was out. And I understand that he pitches in high-leverage situations and that he was doing a terrible job mm-hmm. and that the velocity was down and all that stuff. But you don't do that to proven veterans. You just, I mean, you're managing people as much as you're managing games. And so to give it, to take it away from Storen after a month is pretty significant. And, you know, you look at what he did last year. Brett Cecil started the season as a closer. He was out after 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't slow to react. And well, as far as major shakeups to the lineups are concerned, I mean, Saunders was working out really well at the top of the lineup.
Yep.
When he put Pillar back in there against lefties, he was hitting for a week. And you don't, I mean, I don't see it as, I know there were people who said, well, just throw all the names in a hat and pull them out and shake up the lineup. You know, you're, to, not to put too fine a point on it, but you're an idiot if you have Jose Bautista hitting seventh
yes.
or Josh Donaldson hitting eighth or, you know, Edwin Encarnacion down the bottom line. You're not going to move that around. So there's a very limited amount of things that you can do with the lineup. And with your leadoff man hitting well, you know, I don't, he didn't move Donaldson down. And even in the new look lineup, he didn't move Donaldson down. But so I don't know how much there is for you to do as far as the quote-unquote shake-up of the lineup that wasn't already done by moving Saunders up top and by letting smoke creep up because he was hitting well and
right.
Tulowitzki creeped down.
Yeah, that one I felt was a little slow to develop as well. The one that continues and we might be done with finally is Ryan Goins playing even every day against righties, Mike. Like, give me Darwin Barney against righties, at least for the time being, and until Devin Travis returns, of course. But, like, I don't know why Ryan Goins has deserved to start against righties, and he's not one of those proven veterans that you figure, oh, well, eventually the numbers will go back to whatever they were last year. Like, he had a nice little run at the end of the season last season, and he took some walks and got some hits. But, I mean, Darwin Barney, if he's not the defender that Ryan Goins is, he's pretty darn close and has won a gold glove, not that that matters, but he's a good defender at second base. And why not ride the hot hand right now? Like, why is Ryan Goins starting at all against righties? Of course, Barney's going to be in there today against the lefty, but, like, why start Goins against righties even?
You know what? I really liked what Gibby did yesterday with second base. I still think that Gibbons thinks that Ryan Goins is a much better defender than Darwin Barney, even though he's not. He's an excellent defender. Barney's also an excellent defender. But I liked what he did in that he picked his spot for the bat at second base. You start with the glove. You pick your spot when it's the highest leverage spot. You stick the bat in there, and then you put the glove back in with Barney.
So you use three players for one position every game until Devin Travis returns?
Sure.
Okay. That's nice roster construction.
Who else is Paredes going to pinch hit for at this point in time, right? You don't want to pinch hit for Russell Martin, no matter how badly he's doing, because you always want that. You don't want the drop off behind the plate in a close game between Martin and Toley. So, you know, up and down the lineup, honestly, who else are you going to pinch hit for? If not, maybe a Kevin Pillar, because he's in a huge trough right now over, I don't know what, 18, 19, something like that. But yeah, I don't mind using three guys for one position the way this team is built. If it optimizes your chance of scoring as many runs as possible and preventing as many runs as possible, you're not wrong on Ryan Goins. Look, he's clearly not this bad. He's 8 for his last 84. He's not this bad, but he's not someone who you can confidently say, oh yeah, but we know at the end of the season he'll be hitting 265 with a 320 on base. We don't know that. Not at all. Ryan Goins has had some major, major, major times in the big leagues where he just has not hit at all. And really, he was awesome for a month last year, and he was fine in September, but there's no other point in his major league career where he's been even a reasonably close to average offensive player. But Devin Travis will be back in a week, maybe a week and a half.
Yeah.
And until then, you know, when Estrada pitches, you can start Paredes at second because he's a fly ball guy. And like Thursday night, there are only three balls hit to him, even though he messed up two of them. And until then, like today, Barney will start. Barney will stay in. If there's a big spot where you need something, he's swinging the bat well. He hit a home run last night. But
second
he's
deck.
Still Darwin Barney, right?
Right.
He's still Darwin Barney.
Which is much better than Ryan Goins offensively.
Sure, but it's still not good.
No, it's not. But it's not like the worst ever, which is Ryan Goins right now.
Right now, yes.
And maybe like not much better should be expected of Ryan Goins offensively. I don't
think that's fair. I mean, he's hitting like 97 over the last whatever 25 games.
Okay.
Expect a lot more than that.
All right. Well, I think Darwin Barney at least
has reasonably expect him to be twice as good as he is right now.
Okay, but I know Darwin Barney is no offensive juggernaut. Against lefties, he's like at least a 700 OPS guy. I think against righties, he's at least over 600. I don't know if Ryan Goins is an over 600 OPS guy against righties. Do you
know he is?
No.
I don't know that he is. Barney is. You're right. He's over 600, I think, against righties.
So I would – hey, listen, if you want to go three guys for one position, I'd just flip them. I'd start Barney and then have Goins as the defensive replacement late in games.
I don't have a problem with that.
There you go. Mike Wilner, host of Blue Jays Baseball here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blue Jays and Minnesota Twins, game 3 of 4 in Minnesota. Boy, the Twins are bad, Mike. Poor Twins. Poor little Twins.
Poor Twins is right.
I was kind of reminiscing about the Twins of yore with Johan Santana and Michael Kadire and Torrey Hunter, and they had Joe Mauer. Like, that used to be like one of the marquee franchises, and outside of Santana, they didn't have like great guys, but they had the guys like Kevin Slowey, guys that filled up the zone and relied on their defense a little bit. But they used to be a good team that played in a horrible ballpark. Man, it must be hard to be a Twins fan. Like, imagine you're here. We're not even into June. And as much as there's lots of season to go, and sorry, it is early. The one team, you will follow me on, it's not early for the Twins, right?
Well, it's still early for everybody. But
right,
the Twins,
but it's over.
Have dug themselves a hole that is almost impossible to emerge from.
Yes, they're done.
But you forgot this Justin Morneau guy. He was pretty good.
Yeah, he was pretty darn good, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that used to be a good team, and they used to win that division.
Bad. It really is. And last year, you know what? They weren't a very good team, but Paul Molitor in his rookie season and whatever magic happened over the first 4 months, they were in a playoff spot going into August, and then the Blue Jays just destroyed them, and that was it. It was kind of like they beat them up and sent them home, and they were done.
Although, they bounced back after that, if I recall, because they hung around the wild card chase until the end of the season.
Hung around, but they were up by like four games or something when they got swept by the Jays.
No, I know, and I expected, and I think everybody did, for them to go in a total tailspin. They never really did.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember
I'm
that.
Checking that right now. Yeah. We'll see about that.
All right. You can call me a liar if it's not correct, but that's...
No, you're not lying. It's not intentional. You're not misleading anyone intentionally.
As far as
you know. 54-50. You're right. They were 54-50 when that four-game series happened with the Jays. The Jays kicked the crap out of them for four games, and they played over 500 the rest of the year after they left Toronto. So,
so you have to eat it a bit on that.
Yeah, a little bit. Although, after the sweep, they were 5-7. That's not so bad. And then they went on a six-game winning streak in Baltimore and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, how you like that?
Good for them.
Let's go back to Jimmy Paredes, because he's interesting to me. I don't necessarily like building teams around guys like that, but he's like an interesting guy. He has no position. He cannot play baseball on the defensive side of the game, but he can play offense, it seems. Do the Blue Jays really have a spot for him, though, Mike, especially when Devin Travis comes back?
Yes.
He's just that bench bat.
Yeah, he's Chris Colabello. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. He's Chris Colabello, who's a little bit better defensively in the outfield. You know, you can put him in left field, and you can actually open your eyes, but not much. Colabello, you had to watch him play left field with your eyes closed. But he's here basically to do what Colabello did last season, which is not to say he's going to hit 320, and it's not to say he's going to wind up with the bulk of the first base at bats, because Justin Smoke is hitting really, really well right now. Mm-hmm. But this is a good switch-hitting bench bat who you can put on the field in a corner And, you know, he's not going to be good, but at a corner, he's not going to be awful, and he'll help you offensively. I think that's the job, right? When Colabella went down, they tried Matt Dominguez. That didn't work. So Paredes gets the chance now, and that's what he's here for.
Do you, I haven't seen enough of him. It's so difficult to evaluate defense for players you don't watch every day. So I know he comes with the tag of being a bad defender, and we saw him at second base, and we saw him at third base. What about at first base? Because, yeah, you mentioned, I mean, you're not doing anything. Justin Smoke's playing every day until he proves otherwise this season. I still believe that he will prove otherwise, but so far so good. And another 2-for-5 day yesterday, and he's hitting .295 to go along with his
singles now.
I know. Well, he really hasn't hit for a ton of power. He had that 2-homer game, and what?
How much he got? 3 or 4 home runs?
No, he hasn't hit for
power.
Yeah, he hasn't hit for power at all. He's taking walks, and you know he's getting hits. I don't know. He didn't have a strikeout yesterday, so the BABIP still I think hanging out there. So what? He was 2-for-4. He BABIPed .500 yesterday. So yeah, I still think it's kind of unsustainable. But yeah, you're not moving him right now. Do you know anything about Paredes at first base? What kind of defense he plays?
Not good.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have to throw, so it's better. We saw a really, really good arm in that game at third base, but we also saw him throw a ball away on a ball he was charging in. He's not. I feel like we might be going a little too far. He is a below average defender everywhere. There's a reason that he's played the most games at DH than at any position in his major league career, even though allegedly he can play first, second, third, left, and right. And you would think a guy that versatile, you would want to get out on the field, but he's not good. I'm sure he can handle first and be okay, but he won't be Justin Smoke. And I don't know, you know, with Tulowitzki and whoever's playing second, you don't really have to worry about the throws. Josh Donaldson sometimes needs help from the first baseman. Smoke can do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Paredes can do that. Honestly, I've never seen him play first base, but his defensive reputation is not a good one. So I think, you know, you kind of sprinkle a little bit, but not a whole lot.
So I mentioned Justin Smoke, not a guy that
hope he's never had any faith in Justin Smoke.
Right. And
I have. And okay. I continue to.
All right. That's cool. I mean, he has.
So the BABIP stuff surprises me because I see him as a 3-true outcome guy. And, you know, at the end of the day, I see Justin Smoke as a guy who hits about .245 with an on base of about .335 and 25 home runs. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not the track that he's on right now.
No. That's okay.
That's fine.
For a first baseman.
This team, that's fine.
Yeah, okay, it's not great.
If this team is being this team, that's fine.
If he's playing every day and he's only hitting 25 home runs, that would be a big departure, actually, and that would be a downturn in power for him, because
I think he had 18 in less than 300 plate appearances last year.
Which is insane. He could be a 40 home run guy if that's what you get for a whole season long.
He's got to kick it into gear pretty soon if he's going to do that.
Yes, he does. Okay, so he's not a guy I necessarily believe in. Kind of the same deal with Michael Saunders, another guy you believed in, especially against lefties for some reason.
I never believed in Michael Saunders against lefties.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. Well, do you now?
He's doing well. I mean, I don't know what the raw numbers are. I know he's hit 4 home runs against lefties, and I'm assuming he's had like fewer than 50 plate appearances against them. But I don't know what he's hitting against lefties, to be honest. But I'm enjoying it.
Okay, and you're still on.
You can tell me, I'm sure.
No. I'm the raw numbers against lefties. No, I don't have that up, and I don't want to waste people's time.
You make me do homework here. That's fine.
Yeah. And you're still believing in Michael Saunders defensively in left field, even though
I think he's fine. He's not gonna.
He's below average now.
Glove or anything like that. He is fine. He's better than Melky Cabrera.
Yeah, I don't know. And yesterday. I know Danny Santana's
295 with a .968 OPS against lefties in 48 plate appearances.
It's pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's really impressive.
And I know Danny Santana's fast. Boy,
Santana's really fast.
He looked lumbering getting to that ball in left field.
Well, he had to. he had to wait on that ball because you've got that little short retaining wall. And so Saunders didn't know, nor did anybody else, if it was going to hit off that wall or if it was going to go all the way to the corner. And if you commit to the corner and it hits off that wall, you're totally screwed. If you commit to the wall and it hits in the corner, you got a long run to go up there and get it. So he was completely caught in between. And I know everyone just wants to roast him for everything that he does defensively because he's tripped over his own feet once and he lost a couple of balls in the sun and tripped over a mound, a bullpen mound. But that, there was nothing he could do on that because he had to wait and see where the kick was going to come from.
Okay, fine. That play notwithstanding, he's a below average defender in my eyes. Hey,
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't know if you weighed in on my Twitter poll. Do you think Joe Biagini's actually funny, or is he like a guy who just thinks he's funny?
I like Joe Biagini, but I think he's trying a little too hard.
See? I'm with you. I'm with you. I don't know why I said see. Like, okay.
But I think he has to – he feels like he has to – he has to have a thing.
Yeah.
And the more that we kind of talk about it and the more that people say, oh, Joe Biagini's so funny, you know, he's so different and what a breath of fresh air and he's always kidding around, the more he feels like he has to be that guy.
Yep.
So I think it's sort of it's a monster being fed back and forth. You know, I'd love to be able to just have a serious conversation with him, but that's not possible yet. We'll see.
And especially when
Jerry interviewed him.
Pre-game
show yesterday.
Okay, this is must. I got to hear this one.
Well, no, and it was. You know what? I got to tell you, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to say with about 95% confidence that Tom Young edited an 8.5-minute interview down to 5 and took all the jokes out because it was a great, you know, Joe Biagini answering questions honestly without the just kidding. And you know, you don't want to take away somebody's personality and flair and whatever, but I think he's at the point where he feels like he can't ever turn it off.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
Yeah. I'm with you. But a lot of people do think he's legitimately funny. We'll see if they think he's still funny in a couple of weeks. But if he keeps pitching the way he is, I'm sure you can you know what? Give him the benefit of the doubt. He's funny because he's like
he's had some good ones. He was talking about playing rugby as a toddler and some of the memorabilia he saved or the diapers he wore when he's playing rugby. That's legitimately funny.
Mm-hmm.
When I interviewed him about his major league debut, and he said that he tried to think like a cat on the mound to calm him. That's trying a little bit too hard. But then when I asked him about the cat he had growing up and he said, you know, it was named the cat, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. He's a legitimately funny guy, but you know, pick your spots a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. So maybe he's batting around 300 with the jokes.
For some people he's batting around 900.
Yeah, we'll see. Before we let you go, he is pitching extremely well though, and he's a guy who's now in the mix for the eighth inning. I would think, Mike, he's already got his first major league save under his belt. Like, he has not slowed down at all, and the Blue Jays really might have a find in their Rule 5 pick.
The peripherals aren't great,
aren't they?
The whip is not terrific. When you look at a guy who's, the last time I looked, he had a whip of around 1.4 and an ERA
that's surprising
under 1, you know, which is surprising, but he's pitched really, really well. And maybe that's artificially inflated by a couple of times we gave up a couple of hits and didn't get more than an out, but still didn't give up any of his own runs. I don't know what his inherited runners numbers look like. Anecdotally, in my memory, it feels as though he's been brought on in clean innings more often than not, far more often than not. But he's doing a really, really, really good job. And yeah, this seems to be, you know, when you look back at the Rule Fivers that the Blue Jays have had over the J.P. Ricciardi, Alex Anthopoulos era, Aquilino Lopez might have been the best one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Aquilino was a J.P. guy or a Gord Ash guy. I can't remember. But, you know, he was here and he was the closer for a while, and he got, I think, 14 saves and led the team one year when Billy Koch was hurt. But since then, it's been pretty desolate. It was Corey Thurman and that's it. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a George Bell, Kelly Gruber, Manny Lee Rule 5 pick, but it could be a Jim Acker Rule 5 pick.
Could be a Johan Santana Rule 5 pick.
Yeah. No. Okay. Although, you know what? I'm assuming after this year, Joe Biagini is going to be a starter.
Yep.
If he sticks, and it's still an if on May 19th or 20th or whatever it is, if he sticks, it wouldn't surprise me if next year he was in the rotation in Buffalo as the next guy to be here with, you know, right there with Connor Green and Sean Reed Foley and all of that stuff, if the Blue Jays rotation in 2017 is Stroman, Sanchez, Happ, Estrada, Hutchison.
Just kidding. Yeah, all right.
You can't, you have to say something and then say just kidding.
Oh, okay, sorry. Right. Yes, just kidding. All right. He's been good though. And yeah, so far so good. Although you're right, the peripheral is a little out of whack. The ERA is what? He's at 0.59, and the FIP is 2.83, and the xFIP is 4.07. But hasn't given up as many hits as innings pitched, and walks are a little high. But we're talking about a small sample size as well. And he was a Rule 5 pick, so beggars can't be choosers when you're talking about that. But the Blue Jays looking to continue their winning ways in Minnesota, which many teams have. It's game 3 of 4. This afternoon, 1:30 pregame show with Mike Wilner. Thank you, Michael.
And on that 1:30 pregame show, Jerry will talk to Sal Butera.
Mm-hmm.
I will talk to Joe Siddle. We're not 1,000% sure who Joe's going to talk to yet, but I know he was going after Chad Jurado. So hopefully
cool.
We get that.
That'll be fun. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. All righty.